Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen, and we've got Anthony Mangione. And how are you?
Doing good, Russell. How are you?
Another busy week in the NHL, mm-hmm. and a lot of stuff to talk about. Teams that are still in it, teams that aren't still in it. Mm-hmm. And while we're waiting for Matt Sichoff, the big thing was, I felt yesterday with the Rangers taking out mm-hmm. Ottawa the way they did. Not to say Ottawa was like a Fugazi team or anything, but they were a team on a roll. But, you know, now they're probably a little bit on edge. And even though the Boston Bruins have given them everything to get mm-hmm. in there, you just never know. At the end, there's going to be a little bit of a fight there. And we'll see as far as where the Rangers end up and as far as how things work out for them with Lundqvist going back in and everything else. But
yeah,
they're in pretty good shape. But nothing, I got to tell you, nothing is certain this year. It's all about the matchups. It really, you know, I wouldn't, right now, the way the matchups go, the Rangers would play Ottawa, and that's actually a good matchup for them. The Islanders would play Pittsburgh. That's probably even a good matchup for them. Montreal playing Washington, that's a tough one. So
that'd
be interesting.
That's a nice play. That would be a pretty good playoff series if Montreal and Washington met in the postseason. That would be really good. But yeah, again with the Rangers, I mean it's been a great second half. I mean, you lose Lundqvist, they've been riding with Talbot, and again plus 56 differential right now, best in the East. There's no question. Again, they've been consistent, you know, all year. I have my concerns about them, whether or not they would be able after a postseason run of being able to get back. And you know, they moved themselves in position. They're all, I mean, the Yandel trade put them all in, mm-hmm. and they're playing like it. And that's sometimes, you know, we can criticize, but again, if it's a move that sort of signals to the playoffs that we are going forward, it can really give them that extra boost that might be able to get them over the top, we'll see. And again, with Ottawa and Boston right now, and again, Florida's still in the picture there as well. They're 3 points behind, but, you know, we'll have to see about them. They're at 74 games played. Ottawa's at 73. Boston's at 74. So we're going to see, again, what happens. I mean, Ottawa, tremendous run they've had. Again, can they hold on? They got, again, you know, 9 games remaining on the schedule. Can they maintain is going to be a big question.
We'll see. And right now we have our first guest on the line, Matt Sichoff from NHL.com and the NHL Network. Matt, welcome. How are you?
Hey, guys, doing great. This is an exciting time to be a hockey fan. I tweeted it the other day. I mean, I'm sitting here watching a little Quinnipiac, North Dakota, following along on the NHL action, and you also have CHL hockey, Connor McDavid, pretty good tonight again.
Yeah, it's all over the place, and you could hardly keep up. We were talking about the East matchups in a little, and, you know, of course, in the West, we see the Kings have finally snuck into really nobody's surprise, and they seem like they're the San Antonio Spurs, and they sort of get it together last minute. But we were looking at these potential matchups, and there are some doozies. I mean, you know, if you had St. Louis, Chicago, and Nashville, Minnesota, I mean, some really good teams are going to get eliminated first round, bottom line.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, obviously, with the new format of the playoffs where you're going to see the 2-3 matchup is always going to be one of those tough matchups right now, obviously, just Tampa Bay, Detroit, in the Atlantic, Islanders, Pittsburgh, which you alluded to in the Metro, Vancouver, L.A. in the Pacific. Don't count out those Vancouver Canucks quite yet, even without Ryan Miller. And, that St. Louis, Chicago. I mean, right now that's looking like another one of those barn burner kind of matchups because the one thing St. Louis hopes they don't do is go up 2-0 in a series, as we've seen the last two seasons, and bow out to Chicago last season after having that big lead. I think that's that's the beauty of it right now, is that the races are wide open with, just, a week and a half or so, a couple weeks left. And boy, I mean, I think no one more than St. Louis wants to get that first seed in the Central Division, because, boy, they do not want to see Chicago in that first round.
Matt, how much of a believer are you in terms of, the Predators have had a pretty remarkable season, plus 34 differential. They hit the 100-point mark. Do you see them having a long postseason run, or is the West that kind of thing where it's going to be they're going to have a battle, obviously, but can you see them emerging, potentially getting past, because, getting past the first round has been an issue for them before. Do you see them being able to handle and make a deep run?
Nashville is definitely a team that I've kind of kept my eye on all year. Obviously, with Peter Laviolette's first year, we've seen the success he's had his first, full seasons per se with teams. We saw it with the Islanders. We saw it with the Flyers. We definitely saw it with the Hurricanes if we won a Stanley Cup. I think for me, it will be interesting to see what Pekka Rinne has to give, because I think that obviously is the difference between this team from, last year to this year. And looking up and down their lineup, they have a bunch of guys that have in career years. You look at obviously Philip Forsberg and what he's done this season as a rookie. You look at Roman Josi and his plus 16, 53 points. That is by far his career high. Craig Smith, Colin Wilson, going down the line, all these guys are having, Matthias Ekholm, are all having career years this year. And, sometimes you wonder about the sustainability of these guys, because, obviously under a new system, they're thriving. But can they keep it up, or is it just a mirage of if everyone has a career year, then there's got to be some give in the other end. And, I think for me, I think it all starts, ends, and with the guy in net, Pekka Rinne. Before his injury, there was talk of Vezina, there was talk of Hart, and, we all know that, all three of us know this, and a goalie can push you pretty far in the playoffs. I think it really depends on matchups. I think they could take out Chicago in the first round, but could they kick out St. Louis in the second? I don't see it.
Interesting. So we move on to the fantasy front. We're looking at your latest article. I like your MVP bounce back of Braden Holtby. I saw a different Braden Holtby in the Winter Classic, and I kind of knew he changed. And then I'm actually kind of surprised that I see only 3% of people own Benoit Pouliot, considering he scores 20 goals every year. That's what he gets. He gets 20 goals. He's got 16. He's going to get 20. But I guess maybe because he's on Edmonton and doesn't do a lot else, he wasn't there. I'm happy to see Matt Dumba, because I can't tell you as a prospect guy in that draft, even after that draft, how many people I had to fend off because they thought I had Dumba too high. They don't like him. This, that. Meanwhile, he's becoming a nice NHLer. So you have a real good list, and also for me, I like Mark Giordano a lot. He'll fit in well next year. I don't think people realized that he would play that quickly. I knew he would, because he came from the KHL. Right. And so he already was playing against men, and so you really got a good list here going, and I guess it's playoff time for a lot of the fantasy teams.
I think right now you're looking for these guys, lightning in the bottle, that you can catch, because you've made it this far because of your stars. You've made it this far because of the people that you picked up on the waiver wire. You drafted pretty low, like Braden Holtby. He was picked pretty low in most fantasy drafts. So you've got to look out for those hidden gems, those guys that are coming out of, coming kind of out of, let's not say nowhere, but definitely are playing their best hockey right now. And the biggest thing I always tell fantasy owners is don't forget about those teams out of the playoff runs. The Edmonton Oilers, this offense right now is one of the hottest offense in hockey right now. And it's really led by that top line of Jordan Eberle, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and Benoit Pouliot. Obviously Taylor Hall has returned, but they haven't put him back at that normal spot with Nugent, Hopkins, and Everly because Pouliot has been kind of manning it. They've already had a goal tonight, as we saw. And Matthew Dumba, I mean, oh, I'm with you, Russ. I mean, I was really impressed with him, you know, watching him and really kind of thought this guy was ready to kind of take the next step. Obviously, he's been yo-yoed up and back with the AHL this year. But really has kind of come on his own and had another really solid outing tonight against Calgary. And Marco Dano, I mean, we talk about a red-hot offense, you know, Edmonton, but right ahead of them is the Columbus Blue Jackets. I mean, this team is just on fire right now, another five goals tonight. And, you know, Marco Dano obviously made the team right out of training camp. They saw a lot in him. Struggled off the bat, but sent down, rightfully so, but back up, looked like he belongs. And, you know, really, like I said, you've got to find these guys that are lightning in a bottle at this point because, you know, that's going to be the difference between you winning and you losing.
My team's already lost. I'm in the consolation. So, you know, I could have used you 2 weeks ago and I had Carey Price and I still mismanaged it. But, Ant, that's the way it goes, you know.
Yeah, unfortunately, it seems to be the pattern of things. It's always you get that information just a little bit too late. Matt Rowlett, I know we're getting close here on time. I wanted to ask you, watching last night, watching a little bit of the highlights in the Arizona-Buffalo game, and yeah, obviously the overtime goal that was scored where the Coyotes won, and you saw behind the bench a couple of fans getting up and Sabres fans celebrating the opposing team's scoring, and I know what my reaction was. I'm sure you saw it as well. What was your knee jerk reaction when you saw that?
You know, I think it's all in good fun. I think obviously, you know, I think the race is on. We all know the race. We all know we've all seen Connor McDavid play. We all know how good this guy could really be and what he could really mean to a lot of organizations. I mean, this guy is a top-notch talent, and I'm no surprise to see fans wanting them to be a part of their organization. I mean, you see in Toronto, you see in Buffalo, you see in Arizona, you see in all these teams right now that are, you know, just fighting for you know, more not fighting for their playoff lives, but maybe fighting for the opposite of their playoff lives. I think the race is on, and I think, the fans have every right to be really excited about Connor McDavid because, boy, this guy is sure going to change some franchise fortune because he is that kind of talent.
Yeah, he's a generational player, but I keep trying to impress upon people it's still a 20% chance. And actually in 2011, if the rules were the way they were today, the Devils would have gotten the top pick, but instead they could only move up five spots. So even a team with that 6.5 could legitimately walk away with Connor McDavid. So as much as Buffalo wants him and as much as you think you're in best position to get him, you still may end up with, you know, your number two pick. Just because you ended up in the cellar, it's not a guarantee.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think that, I mean, you know this more than me, Russ, and I think that's where it's almost important to become become the last at this point because you're guaranteed to get that. You're guaranteed to get either that McDavid or the Eichel because, boy, again, watching that BU game today and that long stick Jack Eichel, you know, it's not a bad consolation prize. I mean, I know – McDavid right now has got the lead on this, you know, on Jack, but you know, I think that's where it's coming a little bit closer as you want that last pick instead of that you know, second or third to last pick because you're not guaranteed to get one or the other of McDavid or Eichel.
Yeah, no question.
And it's certainly not a gap like between Kane and Van Riemsdyk, that's for sure.
No.
Yeah, no, it's not as big a gap as those two, but maybe more like Taylor and Tyler, which both worked out, for both organizations, because I think Taylor Hall is one of the most underrated players in NHL right now, and we all know what Tyler Seguin has done in his short NHL career with his goal-scoring prowess and also his Stanley Cup victory with the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. The Taylor was good. What's funny is the at the Kane draft, there wasn't a perceived gap, really, between him and Van Riemsdyk, because a lot of people didn't know what Kane was. We did a show, myself and Shane Malloy, before the draft in the concourse there in Columbus, and a lot of Blackhawks fans were booing us when we said they should take Patrick Kane. They were like, no, he's too small. We've got to get bigger.
Yeah.
We've been bad for too long. I mean, these were the kinds of sentiments going into the draft. So it's funny now in retrospect we look at it that way, but Hawks fans were very nervous that day.
Yeah, well, it also reminds you a little bit of Mitch Marner, right, Ross? I mean, Ross, I think Mitch Marner and London right now, I mean, I think it's very similar to that where, Patrick Kane had that small in stature, and even people were saying, Kyle Turris and everything like that. And I think JVR, because of his big frame and everything, is everyone was kind of a little excited about him. But it kind of reminds me a lot of this Mitch Marner, because I've watched him play, and boy, he can sure move his legs and looks pretty not the stick handler that Patrick Kane was.
He's just as good a puck distributor, he is.
But he is, but a really good with the puck. And you're right, it definitely is one of those things. And that's why, you see those, going back to what, Anthony said, and you see those fans get excited because, boy, it's very exciting right now to see the prospects that are coming up the ranks.
Ant, you got the last question.
Actually, that was my last question that I had for Matt. But thanks.
All right. Well, Matt, listen, we appreciate you coming on. You literally talk hockey all day long, and you took the time with us to talk more hockey tonight. You've got to be watching 24/7 at this point. So thanks, and thanks for the passion, man.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on, guys. Really appreciate it. And yeah, I can't get enough of it. Anytime you guys want to talk hockey, I'm there.
All right. We appreciate
it, buddy. Thanks for calling in.
Everybody, check out
Matt. Thanks, guys. Have a good rest of the show.
NHL.com. Take care.
Take care.
All right, Ant. We got another minute or two before Bob Herpin comes on and talks a little college hockey. We'll go back to the NHL for just a minute while we're waiting and talk about the West just for a second. And I got to tell you, if there's a Canucks Kings first round. Boy, that's a tough one for the Canucks.
That's a tough spot for them. Yeah, that's a very tough spot for them too. But again, if you're going to have a trial by fire, I mean, to me, it'd be the equivalent of last year, New York and Philadelphia. They were just that was a tough series for both clubs, and that's what the NHL wants. I mean, they're looking for a division, those tough slugfest divisional matchups in those 2-3 slots.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what, as of right now, things broke now. St. Louis is like, oh, not you again, Chicago. And and you got that situation, certainly. And add to the mix there, the Islanders and Penguins will probably be a pretty good matchup if the two of them slot with each other. So that's what they're looking for.
Yeah, Tampa-Detroit would be tough, too. I'll tell you, and Anaheim-Winnipeg, that would, to me, would be the one that's impossible to pick, because I don't care that Anaheim has 101 points. I was at the Ranger game where the Rangers scored 7 on them. 7.
Yeah. They have those moments. They have those moments.
They really do.
You think they're really good, and then they cough up a hairball. It's describe that game as a complete hairball for the Ducks, and I think they've recovered somewhat from that. But certainly, it was it's tough, and he sort of still stays in the back of your mind. And then if they get a scrappy team like the Jets, I think they can win. They can win that series, and good chance they will win that series. But they're going to be in for a fight.
Right now, as it stands, the only easy matchup would really be the Rangers over Ottawa. That would be the only easy matchup. And it's not like an Atlanta kind of matchup where they would sweep them.
I think it's a good matchup. It's just a good matchup for the Rangers. I think they match up well against Ottawa. Ottawa's got to hope that you know, Montreal maybe pips, maybe somehow able to pip the them in the standings and get that first seed, and then I think familiarity too as well, playing against the Canadiens. They probably know them a little better. I still think the Canadiens win that series. I just think the Rangers could potentially beat them in like five if they took a series between the two of them. I'd have them winning that series in five.
Yeah. I do think Montreal, though, this year can beat the Rangers. And if they survive the first round, and I don't know when the Rangers would match up. Maybe the Rangers match up against the Islanders second round. Maybe they match up against Montreal. I don't know. But whenever they would match up, if they did, I'm leaning towards Montreal, regardless of how good the Rangers are because of Price. Because I think at the end of the day, while the Rangers beat them last year, it was a nice series. But let's face it, when Price went out, the series got easier.
Yeah, definitely. Now there's any question about that. It definitely became an easy series for them then. But, you know.
All right. We got Bob on the line here. We're going to talk some college hockey with Bob Herpin. Welcome to the show, Bob. How are you?
Gentlemen, glad to join you. It's been a very long day, and there's a couch somewhere in an undisclosed location in west of Philadelphia that has a serious groove in it right now.
Oh, I bet. I bet. So what today has really caught your imagination? There's so many games. Obviously, we can't cover every one of them, and Anthony and I are trying to sort of keep up. Last year seemed to be easier, to at least for me, to figure out when I picked Union, and now this year I'm down to a couple teams, but it seems to be a lot harder. It seems to be a lot more wide open this year.
Well, yeah, this is the second time in 3 years that I'm looking at a bracket, and I'm kind of just throwing up my hands and saying, I don't have any idea. And you know, insofar as you kind of want to look like a smart guy with a hot pick and rise all the way to a possible bracket victory and some monetary considerations. You know, this is a sort of a year like it was 2 years ago, where the best team will reveal itself as it goes through each individual matchup.
Let's take a look at... I'm sorry. Yeah, you first.
I'm saying, let's just... this game that I'm watching right now, North Dakota-Quinnipiac, North Dakota has just hit an empty netter to win, and one of the things that caught my eye about this was the sort of unnecessarily violent way the game was conducted from both sides. Quinnipiac is apparently known for taking the body, but it was to an extreme right away. North Dakota responded to another level, to the point where you have a guy, Paul Ledoux from the Fighting Sioux, giving a score which I don't even think existed in this game, and got thrown out of the game, major for boarding and the game misconduct. But thankfully, North Dakota was up by three when that happened. Quinnipiac only scored a goal, and, you know, they were clear.
Bob, looking at some of the other matchups from earlier today, we had, of course, Minnesota Duluth taking out Minnesota 4-1. Certainly the big one, the big moment of that game, I think, was Raskob's goal deflecting off of Mike Riley. That pretty much put the game out of reach. Considering Minnesota's Final Four berth from last year, are you surprised at all the season out already, or no?
I'm not, and I think it may become clearer in subsequent years is that Minnesota's efforts in terms of recruitment and attitude may need an adjustment, because they're no longer in the crucible of the WCHA, where there were six or seven dangerous teams every year, and Minnesota had to go through that gauntlet every single season, Wisconsin, North Dakota, Denver. This year, in the last 2 years, they've been in the Big Ten. The competition hasn't been as even. There are bigger fish in a smaller pond, and I think that caught up with them this year. The game, unfortunately, was over within that eight-minute span when UND scored those three goals, and even though Minnesota stuck to their game for the rest of the contest, it was a matter of UND getting the breaks and converting them.
And BU barely pulls it out against Yale. I mean, look, I like Keith Alain. Every Frozen Four and every year I've covered hockey, it seems like he's in the playoffs and he's managing to have a pretty good team. That's a pretty bad hiccup, though, for BU, and I hate to say it because my mom went there, but they were able to neutralize Eichel, and if that continues, which it has happened at times this year, that's not going to bode well for them.
Hey, well, Russ and Anthony, it's an easy thing to look from the top down from an NHL perspective with all the hype about Jack Eichel to think that it's Eichel's team and everybody else is sort of going along for the ride, but that's simply not
right.
True. You had Avi Ahtinen's goal, which tied the game, and BU was sort of dead weight until then, which allowed BU's well-documented third-period turbo boosters to kick in.
Mm-hmm.
But Gale seemed to have suffered from a complete meltdown defensively and in terms of discipline. You know, they gave BU two power plays in the final 5 minutes of regulation, and instead of sticking to their system, which caused a lot of turnovers in the first period, decided to play that sort of scrambly defense, answering stride for stride, shot for shot, and puck battle for puck battle. They got away from that, and BU is a team which is going to exploit it every time. Now, I would have expected BU to win the game in regulation with those advantages, but just in the general sense of the way Yale's play deteriorated, you had to know that whatever the next break was going to be after it was 2-2 was going to go BU's way, and it did. Danny O'Regan, probably the least heralded person on that top line,
Yeah. Michael
being number one, and Evan Rodriguez, the third leading scorer in the entire country heading into this tournament, also unheralded. O'Regan was at the bottom of that recognition pile, and there he is on the right spot at the right time for the goal.
Bob, on the other side for Yale, I thought, you know, there was some really good moments there in this game for Alex Lyon. He ends up the game with 39 saves on 42 shots. I know BU really turned it on after the second period. I think the shot they were like it was like a 20-4 shot advantage there. And Lyon being a sophomore, what are your views on him in terms of his future possibly?
Well, that's an interesting question because I didn't get to see as much of the ECAC as I would have liked, but the cure-all for this is if you can put together a performance on the national stage where you're effectively shutting down one of the best lines in hockey for as long as it takes and just a victim of a bad rebound in the end, it says a lot for his confidence. I think the young man should be a little bit wary of anybody saying you can make the leap right now because he was the backstop for what was the number one defense in the entire country. But
mm-hmm.
he looked very solid in that game, more solid than at any time I had seen him. I only saw two games from Yale this season because I was keeping track of Union and Harvard, mostly, as the intersection teams in the ECAC. But Lyon should not be disappointed at all with his performance.
So we get down to, I'm going to let people know, we're going to probably go 5 minutes overtime. So in a couple of minutes, they'll have to come back and listen to the rest. So as we look at teams, I'll tell you, I do like North Dakota. You know, Zane McIntyre, obviously, has been great all year. He's been a name that I've been hearing pop up all year. He'll probably win the Richter Award. I like the Schmaltz brothers a lot. They you know, Nick told me that they played in this cement rink in their basement, and anybody who's tough enough to play in a cement rink is tough enough to go pretty far in this. So I do like them. But I got to tell you, I like BC because I do like their defense. I don't care that they don't score as many goals as they used to. You know, they got size with Tuck. I like Ryan Fitzgerald a lot. Obviously, I like Thatcher Demko. For some reason, those are the two teams I like. I can't narrow it down to one. If neither of them make it, I won't be shocked because, like I said, this year it's been hard to figure, but who do you sort of like as the teams come, you know, at least two of them in the Frozen Four, maybe?
Oh, it's an interesting question because, you know, BC being my alma mater, it's right in my wheelhouse, but there's always a little bit of agita when it comes time to pick them in a year
mm-hmm.
where it's been less than stellar. The two teams that really I would figure would stand out to me, Minnesota Duluth
mm-hmm.
and in tomorrow's regional, Harvard,
mm-hmm.
who I think got a little jip with a 9 seed overall. Boston College, you know, it's clear that with the graduation rates and with the fact that there's no more Gaudreau, no Arnold, no Paul Carey, that the
mm-hmm.
offense has disappeared. But I'm just not there, and it's a little more than just trying to cancel out a little bit of reverse psychology there. They were shut down by a vastly inferior overall Vermont team in the Hockey East playoffs in three straight.
Mm-hmm.
And it it's interesting to note that Noah Hanifin had a goal and assist in one game Boston College won and was completely blanked for the final two games by Brady Hoffman and the rest of the Catamounts.
Mm-hmm.
And the other funny thing about Boston College is that of all the matchups, BC and Denver are known to each other the most. This is going to be their fourth matchup against each other in the last calendar year.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Last year, Johnny Gaudreau dropped a sixth spot, 3 goals and 3 assists
mm-hmm.
their regional opener. And then they played two very tightly contested 2-1 games in a split in late October at Magnus Arena in Denver. So I don't know necessarily know what to make of it, except it's sort of a thing where you just sit back, clasp your hands behind your head, get the popcorn and the soda out, and just watch it unfold. I like what I see from North Dakota, even though they're missing senior and at one time top scorer Mark McMillan.
Yeah, it's a tough loss.
Tonight, they registered a power play goal, even strength goal, and shorthanded goal before the game sort of evolved into an NHL playoff contest where scores were settled. And I'm eager to see top overall Minnesota State, and then another team which I did not get a good look at, but opens up against 16 seed RIT, the champions of Atlantic hockey. And I'm hoping with a lot of these close games that at least we're going to see a top overall seed dominate its opponent right out of the gate.
Bob, I should ask the obvious question since it's that time of year and it is March. How are your brackets looking? And this will be obviously the hockey bracket in this case.
believe it or not, my basketball bracket is looking way better than my hockey bracket. And this is the first year where, in terms of college hockey, I didn't hop right to it as soon as the brackets were announced. I was actually sort of scrambling in the last couple hours here to fill out the whole thing. And I also find it heavily ironic that Robert Morris's basketball team went further than its hockey team, which was knocked out of the Atlantic Hockey Playoffs despite winning the regular season title. And I kind of wish that Robert Morris is there because they have a Hobie finalist in Cody Wido. But I picked North Dakota correctly. Didn't pick St. Cloud State, and they are going to be the prohibitive underdogs. That is, unless RIT somehow pulls off a miracle or 15-seeded Providence overcomes Miami with John Gillies in goal. Was correct in picking Minnesota Duluth because I was very much down on Minnesota. And even though it goes against my instincts, hey, I had to pick Boston University, and I didn't think it was going to be as close as it was, but there we go. So far, 3 out of 4.
That's pretty good. I will say this about Providence, and nobody really gets to see them a lot. I like Gillies a lot, but they just, I don't think they have a lot of scoring punch, and I'll tell you, it just doesn't look great for Mark Jankowski, either a first-round pick at Calgary. I mean, it was a controversial pick when they took him, and I don't know how long it's going to take him to develop, if he develops.
Well, I'll tell you what, Russ, thanks for bringing that up, because I was really, for all these teams in the tournament, I was scrambling the most to try to find something that I could latch onto about Providence other than Jankowski and Gillies, and there really is nothing.
No. No, it's really true. And so that's why I think Enrico Blasi will figure out a way. I think he always figures out a way. Well, Bob, listen, let everybody know where they could keep up with your writing and everything else while the Frozen Four is in full force here.
Oh, great. Well, college hockey writing, as it has been since last year around this time, will be on hockeybuzz.com. I'll be riding shotgun with Julie Robenheimer, who does her usual regional previews, mm-hmm. Frozen Four stuff, and all the attendant feature stories. But I'll be in there with some good historical points and possibly a little point counterpoint as the Frozen Four draws near. You can also catch my stuff on daily.fanaticmag.com. I'll have a nice piece provided that Michael Parks does well and North Dakota does well. He's a Flyers draft pick 2010 and a senior. Mm-hmm. And you can also find me on sportsnetwork.com because I will have something to say about the National College Tournament as a whole once it nears its completion. So thanks, guys, for having me on. It was great talking with you. And now back to wearing out that groove and trying to figure out the other side of my bracket.
All right. Take care.
Take care, Bob.
All right.
All right, Ant. You got anything to add before we close this out?
In terms of just overall, at the moment, at this point right now, again, we're sort of waiting with bated breath with regards to the, like I said, with the postseason picture right now between Ottawa and Boston, as we talked about earlier. But
do you want to postmortem the Flyers for a minute?
Yeah, we could probably postmortem them right now, certainly. But again, it's been, you know, as the puck spins for them in terms of just whatever the latest controversy is now, of course, with the injuries to the Simmons and obviously the McDonald's at this point. They're pretty much – and they're, again, now you're looking at the situation here where the Flyers actually might still be able to move, depending on what happens to them right now, they might still be able to move down a little bit further in the standings. You know, we're talking about tanking and everything, but
they
Columbus
could
again
get
with
a top five.
Columbus
tank.
Has got 70. Columbus has 73 games played with 2 points. They're not that far behind. The Devils as well could potentially, you know, they're 74 games. So the Flyers, this is the one case where they're more games played works to their advantage in terms of if they're trying to increase their chances at maybe moving their percentages up in terms of getting maybe closer to the into the top five, or if they get lucky enough to get in, you know.
I did want to address one quick thing, too, within the Flyers. I don't know if you saw it, but, like, Sam Donilon was sort of, like, saying he doesn't think they're going to be good for a number of years, and I disagree with him. I think it was too much for him to look at this year and say, oh,
yeah,
this is a team that can't recover because it's a mixed bag. This team is a mixed bag of young and old, and they have more young than old. So, you know.
My counter to Sam would be basically, things turn around fairly quickly. Can I say for next year, it's going to be a little bit questionable for them, especially on their blue line, at least as it stands right now. Yeah. I think next year might be another year where they're treading water a little bit in terms of
mm-hmm.
And the problem is for them is that, again, you're losing Claude Giroux's prime years potentially mm-hmm. as the team attempts to rebuild. Now, again, if they somehow get lucky and are able to end up with a Jack Eichel. But, again, we all know the way this thing works. As much as you want to push the generational talent, we all know development is about – for a team has to be the structure of the entire organization and not just one draft pick. So it's a deep draft. If they can get up into the top four, top five in this case, and get in the range of a guy like a Dylan, you know, get in range of a guy like a Dylan Strome or a Mitch Marner,
mm-hmm.
those are guys that are really excellent talents. And
they
come away pretty happy with it. So again, they're kind of playing this thing out till the end of the season. And, we'll see where things end up shaking by the time we get to late June, certainly. Well, actually, we'll find out soon enough on April 18th, depending on the draft order. At least that's the report. That was the report at April 18th.
That is the report.
Lottery.
All of a sudden, that draft lottery becomes very important to a lot of people out there where last year
mm-hmm.
maybe not a lot watched, and this year it's going to be must-see TV. We'll leave it there.
Yeah.
We
yeah.
thank everybody for tuning into Off the Post, and we'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.